You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony,
okay, here's a funny story. A long time ago, before podcasts and smartphones were a thing, before the internet came online, I guess, before Taylor Swift met Jake Gyllenhaal, I had a radio show, Savage Love Live. It aired in Seattle on Sunday nights. It was a lot like the podcast. Answered listener questions with my co-host, Mary Martone, a.k.a. The Big Tipper. We talked to guests. We got into it. But unlike the podcast, we had to worry about the Federal Communications Commission shutting us down. And the one night we really were most worried about the FCC shutting us down was the night I got into it with this guy who didn't like something I'd written in Savage Love, my column that week, something I wrote about bestiality, which I am against. Fucking animals. Not a fan. Don't think people should fuck animals. Pretty much for the same reasons as everybody else. Because animals can't consent. And this guy called me at work after I wrote that in my column, and he somehow got through to me at my desk, and I somehow made the mistake of picking up the phone that day, not knowing who was on the line. And it was this furious, well, today they call them zoophiles, people who are attracted to animals. He'd seen my column, and how dare I? He was married to his horse. How dare I imply there was something non-consensual or rapey about his loving horse marriage. This guy lived in a state where bestiality wasn't illegal at the time, a state I will not name because somebody else named it Kentucky in 1792, and his argument was basically, if you're doing something on the rear end of a horse that it doesn't want you to be doing, the horse is going to kick you in the head and you're going to die, and there's no part of that, no, you won't understand. So I did what anybody with 3 hours of airtime a week to kill on a terrestrial radio station would do, and I asked him if he wanted to come on my show and talk about it. And much to my surprise, he did. So we had him on Savage Love Live and talked to him for at least a half an hour, maybe 45 minutes. And at the end of the show, I realized I hadn't asked what would to anybody else be, I guess, the obvious question. Was he married to a boy horse or a girl horse? The music was coming up. The producer was giving me the international producer sign to a radio show host for cut him off, which is a finger drawn across the neck. And I quickly asked, oh, hey, before we let you go, are you married to a boy horse, circle horse? And there was this long pause. I could hear himself in my headphones, hear him drawing himself up. And then he finally choked out, I am not a homosexual. He wanted to make it very clear that there wasn't anything gay about his horse marriage. He married a girl horse, according to God's plan. That plan, of course, being one man, one woman. Or, failing that, one female of a species to be named later. I thought of that call after a tweet began to appear and reappear in my timeline over the weekend. By the time I saw this tweet, it had already been quote-tweeted more than 2,000 times. So maybe you saw it. Maybe it got quote-tweeted into your timeline, too. It read, fuck most of the LGBT community. You don't come to the defense of zoosexuals and attack us. You don't make an effort to understand us or hear our arguments. Until zoosexuals are cared about, I won't care about LGBT. Hashtag LGBT. I'm not going to read out the person's handle. And I didn't quote tweet that tweet myself. I try not to participate in Twitter pylons. I'm not always perfect. I sometimes succumb to temptation. But after I saw that tweet, and I saw that tweet had already been quote tweeted more than 2,000 times, all by furiously outraged LGBT folks making the point that the Z had nothing to do with the LGBT, everyone telling the original poster that she was sick and should be locked up. Yeah, I didn't tweet about it myself. I did, however, click through to read the original poster's other tweets, curious if she meant it sincerely or if she was just trolling. And turns out, after reading her feed, she meant it. And turns out, after reading her feed, she clearly means it. And again, I think she's wrong. That said, now, the best science and research and data we have all indicates that zoophilia, like pedophilia, these things function like sexual orientations. They are sexual orientations, as awkward and uncomfortable as it makes me to say that. But they do not belong in a movement that is about freeing people, liberating people, whose sexual expression and liberation does no harm. Preventing a gay man from loving another gay man, preventing two consenting adults from loving each other for an hour or a lifetime, that harms both those men. It creates only pain. Preventing a pedophile from raping a child protects that child, and it protects that man from the legal and social consequences of that act. Preventing a zoophile from fucking an animal, which Kentucky got around to doing in 2019 when it criminalized people having sex with animals, protects the animals who can't consent, or that can't consent. But I gotta say, when I click through to read the original poster's other tweets to see if she was trolling, she made one good point. Not that the Z has any place in the LGBT movement, it does not, but that carnivores, people who eat animals, who then turn around and say zoophiles, people who fuck animals, are guilty of consent violations, are themselves guilty of hypocrisy? Now, again, I don't think people should fuck animals. Well, people shouldn't fuck animals who aren't also people. People are animals. And I'm also not casting judgment on or kink-shaming early modern humans, Homo sapiens, our ancestors, who mated with Neanderthals 100,000 years ago, when those early modern humans migrated out of Africa and encountered Neanderthals in Europe. Not judging, not shaming. I don't want to pile on to them either, those early modern humans who fucked Neanderthals. But I gotta say, the original poster, this woman who fucks animals but doesn't eat or wear them, has a point. The same people who get very precious about consent where animals and sexual activities are concerned aren't at all concerned about consent where dinner is concerned, or industrial farming, or being slaughtered, cut into pieces, those little pieces being shrink-wrapped and shipped off to supermarkets, sold, cooked, and eaten. The only animals I've ever seen consent to that kind of treatment are anthropomorphized pigs holding up huge plates of ribs on the signage outside barbecue restaurants. It is something that those of us who think it's wrong to fuck animals, and I think it's wrong to fuck animals, it is something that we need to think about more deeply. If it's wrong to fuck a chicken because it can't consent to being fucked, it's wrong to murder and eat one, right? Fucking cows, wrong. Wearing leather pants, wrong for the same reason, I guess. I struggle with this as a meat eater with a thing for hot guys in leather pants. And I really, really hate it feeling called out by a dog fucker on the internet. But until we give up meat, until we shift to plant-based diets and plant-based fetish gear, dog fuckers and horse marriers and chicken filleters can get away with calling us all hypocrites. Okay, coming up on today's show on the Micro Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and ads too, and on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, all those Q's and more Q's, all those A's and more A's, no ads, and Emmy-winning comedian Judy Gold joins me to talk lesbians who make yucky sex faces, loving fat women, terrible roommates, and yes, we also talk for a little bit about Dave Chappelle. Before we get to it, though, a quick call for calls. Since holidays can be hard on queers, next week we want all the calls on the show to be from gay, queer, trans folks. I know for many of my listeners, Thanksgiving can be a difficult holiday, especially if your family of birth has rejected you for being queer. So, LGBT listeners, next week's show is your show. Give us a call, record your questions, we will get them on, and we'll have some very special guests for you. And to be clear, I'm taking questions from the L's, the G's, the B's, and the T's next week, please, but no Z's. Not that I won't answer questions about Z stuff, I will and I have, but I am not lumping the Z's in with the L's, the G's, the B's, and the T's. All right, let's get to it. Foria is an all-natural health and sexual wellness company with product lines using the power of plant actives and CBD to effectively enhance intimacy, sexual pleasure, daily well-being, and relief from discomfort. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage.
Dame Products is a woman-founded company that makes toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people, their innovative, doctor-approved products for pleasure are designed to enhance and enrich all kinds of sex. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see what they can bring to your bedroom, or wherever, you know, you do it.
Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Savvy at Risks. 50s East Coast by Poly Guy. I love cum. I love jizz. I like it when guys come on me. Sometimes when guys come on me, yeah, some's going to get in my mouth, some's going to get in my eyes. I keep trying to ask my doctors a question, and they keep interrupting me, thinking I'm asking a different question. But the very specific question I'm asking is, if I'm not touching them, and they're not touching me, and the only thing that's happening is that they're coming on me, and some of it gets in me, I know I'm at a slight risk for hepatitis, I know I'm at a slight risk for HIV, though I'm on PrEP, but am I at risk for the other diseases? Am I at risk for syphilis? Am I at risk for chlamydia, gonorrhea? Every time I try to ask this question, they interrupt me and say that if I'm sucking someone's cock, I might get those diseases. I'm not sucking their cocks. They're just coming on me. What's my risk for them? And as a follow-up question, I try to look this stuff up on the internet, but I get very vague and sometimes shamey answers, or all different answers, but how long after possible exposure to chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis do I need to be tested in order for the results of that test to be meaningful? I'm fluid bonded with my girlfriend. These are important safety questions. I'm not going to change my kinks. I like to do what I like to do. I'm kind of sick of the low-level shaminess that comes from answering these questions, as if I shouldn't be fluid bonded, or as if I shouldn't have these kinks, or that this shouldn't be both.
Syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, all bacterial infections, and easily Googleable, all three of those bacteria can be present in semen. So if you're getting semen in your mouth, if you're getting semen shot into your eyes, there is a risk of transmission. You could get one or all of those infections if the person who's coming in your eye or whose cum is getting into your mouth has one or all of those infections. None of those infections are spontaneously generated when semen comes into contact with buttholes or mouths or eye sockets. It has to be there, the person blowing that load on you and maybe getting a little bit incidentally into you has to have chlamydia, syphilis, or gonorrhea to pass it along to you. But yeah, present in the semen. It's not all over the dick, outside the dick, it's in bodily fluids like semen, which makes the dick, you know, plunging in and out of you, shoving that semen up into your orifices if you were having penetrative sex, the most efficient mode of transmission for all of those sexually transmitted infections, including also HIV. But yeah, there's a risk here. Early on in the AIDS crisis stage of the AIDS epidemic, one of the slogans, one of the safe sex slogans was on me, not in me, because somebody blowing a load on you was highly unlikely, very unlikely. The chances that someone would transmit HIV to you, even if they had HIV, by blowing a load on you were so, so small compared to, you know, the much more efficient mode of transmission that was somebody fucking your ass. So yeah, I think what you're doing is really, 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 really safe, but it's not without some risk. As for how long you gotta wait between exposure, if somebody blows a load and it hits you in the eyes, and testing, 2 weeks on the outside for symptoms to appear or for tests to show whether or not you were infected with a sexually transmitted disease, whether you're symptomatic or not. So if you go to these sex parties a lot, if you get cum on a lot, you're fluid bonded with your partner, there is some risk to you, there is some risk to your partner. You should be getting tested regularly. If there is a moment where somebody was going to come on you and all that load went right into your eye or got in your mouth, well, then you should probably stop having condomless sex with your fluid bonded partner for 5 days to 2 weeks. Test, get the all clear, and then you can go back to condomless sex with your fluid bonded partner.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech savvy at risk youth. Bisexual, cis male, teenager calling from somewhere in Western Canada. My problem relates to delayed ejaculation. As long as I've been sexually active, I've struggled with not really being able to reach orgasm from most forms of sex. I could be active in penetrative sex for hours on end and not reach orgasm or even really come close to it. I do get pleasure out of sex, and by no means does my usual inability to have an ejaculation ruin sex whatsoever for me. But it would be nice to be able to finish with an ejaculation from penetration on my own end. I will add that I have been able to reliably ejaculate during sex before, but it's essentially from me jacking off for sometimes as long as 10 or 15 minutes, as my partner, at the very least, gives me affection. Is there many people with my problem who are able to overcome it? Is there any activity or exercise I should start doing to enable me to ejaculate from penetration? I wouldn't be opposed to trying ED medication, although from what I've heard, that can also further delay physical orgasm. What should I do, Dan?
ED meds, erectile dysfunction meds, are prescribed to men who are having difficulty getting erect. Doesn't sound like you're having any difficulty getting an erection. And yeah, ED meds sometimes help men get erections, but then make it a little bit more difficult for men to climax. So the last thing you want to add to the mix is an ED med. I'm curious, when you do masturbate when you're alone, how you're masturbating. There's something we've talked about a lot on the show. You're a teenager, perhaps a new listener. We've talked a lot about what I've called death grip syndrome. If you have a style when you masturbate where you grip your dick with so much pressure and force, the kind of pressure and force that a mouth, an anus, a vagina can't replicate, or if you masturbate dry with a lot of, I would find it very irritating, friction, or if you hump a crusty pillow, or as some men do, hump a floor or put your penis between the mattress and box springs and hump that in order to masturbate, you could have induced something that's called traumatic masturbatory syndrome, where basically it's just fancy for your dick is just really accustomed to a certain kind of stimulation and shifting during partnered sex. And you're young, and I imagine you haven't been having partnered sex for that long. That shift, that transition to partnered sex, where the sensations coming at your dick are very different than the sensations you've been providing your own dick for however many years you've been masturbating before partnered sex, that can be tricky. My advice is to vary your masturbatory routine. Use a lighter touch. Use lubricant. Try to get a fleshlight. Try to replicate what it's like to have intercourse. And then enjoy your masturbatory sessions. But if after 20, 30 minutes you don't come, you don't get to come. Don't then revert to whatever you were doing in the past that worked out of frustration at the very end. Because what you got to do is you got to starve your dick out. You've got to retrain your dick. You've got to carve new neural pathways. And if you stick with it for 3 months, 6 months, you can successfully retrain your dick if indeed, you know, death grip syndrome or traumatic masturbatory syndrome are the problem here. The problem, and what can be tricky about doing something about your quote-unquote problem, is for some people, this is just how their dick works, that they'll always have to masturbate themselves to a finish at the end. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. We don't tell women who require a Hitachi Magic Wand vibrator to be brought in during intercourse in order to climax that they're broken. That's just what they need. This may be just what you need. But to find out if it's really just what you need and that you're always going to have to finish yourself off, as some people say, you got to starve your dick out for 3 to 6 months. My other bit of advice for you is to start firing on more cylinders. Some people find that intercourse, you know, being the person doing the fucking, is great, and they can last and last and last, but they can't ever quite get there. They can't climax. They can't come. And then one day, suddenly, somebody puts a finger in their butt while they're fucking them, or somebody starts playing with their tits while they're fucking them, and they can climax. If they start firing on more erogenous zone cylinders, if it's not all on the dick, if you start throwing more things at basically your body during intercourse, besides just the wonderful feeling of your dick sliding in and out of somebody, suddenly you're able to climax. And then it becomes really learning how to coordinate those things, the stimulation that you need in addition to the stimulation your dick is getting during penetrative sex that pushes you to that wonderful point of orgasmic inevitability. So you've got some experimenting and playing to do. You're young, you're a teenager. I assume you're only recently sexually active with partners. Play, experiment. In time, you'll find what you need, what works for you. And in the end, what you're doing now could be what works for you forever. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria, makers of products for amazing sex, the kind of sex you want to have. Products including arousal oil, clean lube, bath salts, and suppositories. People are literally saying things like this about Foria's products. This is a quote: "I had a 3-minute orgasm and then a 5-minute orgasm and felt like I was surfing in a perpetual wave pool of pleasure." And another quote: "We use Awaken, and when she gets on top, we both come so hard that we see sounds and hear colors." And it doesn't hurt when GQ calls you the best sex product of the year, and Shape says you are the best invention since the vibrator. Now, this is a little personal, but Terry and I tried the suppository, and leave it to Foria to make suppositories sexy. They did it. I'm not sure what they put in there. I know there's CBD at least, but they have some serious love potion energy. So yeah, you have my permission to try this. I fully endorse you to go ahead and treat yourself to more deeper, fuller pleasure wherever you can find it as often as possible. And you can start with a bottle of Foria. Foria is offering a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage or use the code SAVAGE at checkout. That's foriawellness.com/savage for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their Awaken Arousal Oil and Sex Oil. You'll thank me later.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 30-year-old man in the Pacific Northwest. My wife and I, we are in an open marriage, and we love engaging in group sex with men, women, couples, you name it. We are not fans of the swingers clubs for a variety of reasons that I won't get into, but just that's not an option for us, really. We have used a couple of different apps like Field and ThreeFun, but the problem that we're finding is that it is sort of overrun with window shoppers. And what I mean by that is it's just a bunch of people who really seem to have no intention of actually ever meeting up. You know, they'll talk a big game. We will text or talk on Kick. And then, you know, once we figure, okay, there's a connection here, there's some chemistry, why don't we meet up for drinks or something? They're like, well, let us get back to you. And then we never hear from them again, even after we follow up, like, hey, I haven't heard from you. Is there a day and time that works? We'd love to meet you, just see how we vibe. And that's it. So my question to you and to your listeners is, what can we do? Is there a better app? Is there a better website out there? Again, the clubs are just really not for us for a number of reasons that I don't need to explain. It'll take too long and it's just not an option for us. So is there something we can do? And also, to anyone listening who is dipping their toes in these apps, if it is not something you want to do and actually follow through with, please, please, please get off the apps. And if you're new to it and You're unsure, you're nervous. Just be honest about that, because there's nothing wrong with being new to it and being nervous, but you need to let us know ahead of time, because we may not want to waste our time with someone who's not going to ever want to meet up.
Ordering everyone who's not serious about meeting up or too nervous to actually follow through and meet up to get off the hookup apps. Oh my God, that is such a good idea. I don't know why no one ever thought of that before. Oh, no, wait, I do know why no one ever thought of that before, because it won't work. This is one of maybe a classic example of how you can't control other people's actions. You can only control your own. You can't control whether people who aren't serious about meeting up or are too nervous to ever actually meet up are going to get on hookup apps and futz around, waste other people's time. You can't control that. You can only control your actions. So, how do you avoid time wasters? By not wasting your own time. Don't go round and round endlessly with a couple or with someone that you met on what is a hookup app and make a huge emotional investment in them. After establishing mutual interest in a few exchanges of texts and photographs, propose a meetup. Just a meet and greet, quick coffee date, no pressure, no expectation of play at that moment to see if you vibe in person. And if they can't meet up with you or won't meet up with you, don't waste any more of your time on them. Hookup apps. Sometimes it just feels like people have unrealistic expectations about what hookup apps are. A hookup app is a bar in your pocket. And when people used to primarily pick other people up in bars, you had a lot of short, incidental interactions with people. You made a lot of eye contact. And for the most part, those short, incidental interactions, you know, kind of eye-fucking or flirting with people or going up and talking with people, usually led nowhere. And yet, people didn't lose their minds or get super upset. I'm not saying you're losing your mind. I'm not saying you're super upset. But people didn't get as exercised. You know, when they went to the bars and they flirted with 20 people and went home with one, they didn't get as exercised about having their time wasted by the 19 people they flirted with but didn't hook up with, in the same way that people who get on hookup apps get annoyed with the 19 people who ghosted on them or they flirted with or swapped some messages with and then they never heard from again, even though they got to, you know, hook up and have great sex with the 20th person or the 30th person that they spoke with. Try to keep those interactions in perspective and limit the amount of time and energy you invest in anyone prior to that first meetup. Don't waste your time on people who might be wasting yours. The quickest way to find out if somebody is serious about actually meeting up is to propose to actually meet up in a low-pressure, low-stakes circumstance. Not meet up, not come to our hotel room at 11:30 p.m. because we're in town, but meet up for coffee in the middle of the day to have a quick face-to-face and then follow up and see if they want to schedule that hookup. If they're not interested in ever actually hooking up, they won't want to have that coffee date and you won't have to waste any more of your time on them.
Here at the Lovecast, by now you know, we are all about sex and all about pleasure. It's good for you, and there's no shame in it. And accessible, expertly designed toys can play a big part in getting you there and making you feel more alive. Dame is a woman-founded company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved toys for sex. Started by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops their products based on research and feedback from real humans, meaning people like you. They're making better sexual experiences and more pleasure available to all. Dame's easy-to-use toys and accessories are made with body-safe materials and smart design principles, and they've earned glowing praise from the New York Times, the Today Show, and many more. Whether you're looking to shake things up with your partner or upgrade your self-care routine, they've got something for every nightstand. Even better, Dame offers 3-year warranties and hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage for $10 off your order with Dame. That's dameproducts.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Nancy. What's up, Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth? Dan, I got a question for you. Me and my partner are in our mid-20s, and we've been together for about 2 years, about halfway through those 2 years, you know, COVID happened, and they came out to me as ace. We never really clicked sexually, but we have a great, loving, and emotionally fulfilling relationship. But my problem is that sexually, I don't feel super fulfilled. It's clear that they're a very loving sexual partner, and they want to please their sexual partner because that's what society says they must do. But, like, I'm someone who consent's not really enough for. I want excited, enthusiastic consent, which I've had from sexual partners in the past, and perhaps I'm not bringing enough of that to this relationship. I want to be appreciative of the maintenance sex that it feels like we do have, but I have kind of a problem there. I still have this feeling like I'm unfulfilled there, and it's making me want to look for other sexual partners. We've talked about that, and they're completely against that, which, you know, it's fine. We definitely started this relationship under the premise of monogamy, so I get that. But I'm also thinking, like, I don't know if that's the price of admission I really want to pay.
So I have a quick follow-up question for you. You say a year into this relationship during the COVID lockdowns, your partner came out to you as ace, as asexual. Was that a realization they had a year into the relationship, or was that something that your partner knew about themselves before getting into the relationship with you and didn't tell you about until a year in?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think it was something they always knew, but it was something that, you know, you come into yourself and you kind of understand, and then something clicks and you're like, oh, this is me now. This is my identity.
Okay. So like, your partner knew what asexuality was, but hadn't yet self-identified as asexual, but thought that might be possible for her. It might be an explanation. Ugh, oh my God, this is difficult, you know?
Yeah, right. Because then you want to be supportive of partner.
You want to be supportive of your partner, but not to the point where you're sawing your own limbs off. You know, you have a reasonable desire to have sex with someone or some people who enjoy sex the way you enjoy sex as a sexual person, not always just to have sex with someone who's going through the motions and playing the fleshlight because that's something that they have to do to keep you in the relationship. And they don't want you doing that thing that they don't want to do with anybody else for reasons that never make sense to me. Seems to me, if you're in a monogamous relationship with someone who's asexual, ideally that would mean you don't not have sex with anybody else. You only not have sex with them. So,
right.
While she makes a reasonable point that, you know, the relationship is always premised on a monogamous commitment, you also went into this relationship making the perfectly reasonable assumption, because it's true 99% of the time, that she was an allosexual like you, that she was a sexual person like you. That turned out not to be the case. Well, now you have to reassess whether you want to stay in the relationship and the terms if you do stay in the relationship. And if she's unwilling to reassess the terms, I don't see how you stay.
Yeah, because at the moment we're trying to, like, reassess the terms and, you know, trying to find ways of connecting again and, like, making dates and making, like, sex dates so we can, like, find ways to fill each other's needs, but that's like pretty much about what we're trying. So it's a hard place to come from.
Is it always going to be in the back of your head though, that she's just,
that's my problem with it, that it is kind of always in the back of my head. And I don't know if whatever energy that's brought is something that I can really like feel excited and fulfilled about.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I could feel excited and fulfilled about having a partner who allowed me to jack off inside them so I didn't jack off inside anybody else. That doesn't sound like a basis on which to build a fulfilling connection. I can understand why some asexual people go there. Often when they realize they're asexual after they've made a commitment and they value so much else about the relationship, they don't want to lose it. And so they, you know, want to keep having sex to please their partner. And I think that's, you know, often even sexual people will have sex just to please a partner at times.
Mm-hmm. Definitely at times. And there's so much pressure socially to like keep a partner in a monogamous relationship too.
Yeah. So I don't want to suggest that, you know, if somebody's having sex with you because you want to have sex and they don't particularly want to have sex, that anything necessarily terrible is happening there, as long as nobody is left traumatized by it. Maintenance sex is a thing that all people do, sexual and asexual. All of us sometimes consent to maintenance sex. And at that moment, you know, it's not that you're having sex you don't want to have. You're having sex you want to have for reasons other than wanting to have sex. But in my experience, you know, in a couple of long-ass term relationships, if it was only ever maintenance sex on one side, I don't see how I could, I don't see how I could stay, or I would be bitter or angry or resentful. Just like I would come to not want to have sex. Sometimes even when you're having maintenance sex with a long-term partner who's sexual, you know, the maintenance sex is infused with a kind of passion because usually the sex is mutually desired on both sides. So even when you're just being indulged, it's indulged in a sort of a context, in a, you know, a continuum of mostly desired on both sides sex at any given moment. And without that, like those tent poles of mutual desire, I don't see how maintenance sex, just if it was always and only maintenance sex, wouldn't negatively impact my desire, if I was a sexual person in this kind of relationship, for my partner at all, ever.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really starting to tax on me.
Yeah, and there's what she's giving you, and then there's what she's denying you. You know, she's giving you sex, she's milking the cow, because she has to keep you. But she's also then, you know, if you stay in the relationship under those terms, denying you as a sexual person that electric feeling when you're in the moment and in the groove with someone, when you're both wanting it and it's good and great on both sides. And that isn't a trivial thing. That's a transcendent thing. And it's really important,
it
I think,
is.
For
it's
us.
Something, it's really hard to ignore too, especially when you're, when you do have that loving and passionate partner who you do want to like not say no to or reject because it's something they can't control, but it's also something that you can't really control either, that electric feeling that you get.
Yeah. I think you need to end this relationship.
Yeah.
Or open it.
Yeah. And we've been talking about opening it. But, you know, again, we're so socialized to monogamy, and that's so much of what we feel love is, that when we go to that idea, it's a really hard place for a lot of people.
It is. It is. It's going to be hard for her. She needs to recognize that what she's asking of you is also hard. And if neither of you can do the hard thing, then you need to do the equally hard thing of ending the relationship. And that doesn't mean withdrawing your love or support. You can love and support and leave someone.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do, but I want to do the supporting, loving thing. So maybe that's both. I'm not sure.
And in the long run, you know, as painful as it might be to end the relationship now, like 5 years in the future, you guys are friends. She has a new partner who is also asexual or gray sexual, makes very few demands on her sexually, that she loves, and you're with someone or multiple people 5 years from now who are into you and that you love, but are also really into sex, and you guys are still friends. There may be a point where you look back and regard the breakup now, as painful as it might be, to have been in your own interests on both sides, and to have been the right choice for both of you, and the loving choice for both of you. But as often is the case with breakups that are in the best interest of all involved, it's one person who makes the call.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of thinking about it that I hadn't really thought of before. Just thinking about the future.
Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Sure thing. Bye. If you run a small business that involves shipping your products, then you are likely hoping for a big holiday season. And a great way to simplify your business and save some serious money is by using Stamps.com. You can easily compare prices and delivery dates across major carriers and get huge discounts, up to 40% off USPS and up to 76% off UPS rates. Whether your sales come from Etsy, Shopify, eBay, or other sites, Stamps.com streamlines your shipping and makes customers happy. For over 20 years, Stamps.com has helped over a million businesses save time and money on shipping. Stamps.com gives you exclusive discounts with the United States Postal Service, UPS, and DHL. It integrates with all your sales channels across the top marketplaces and automatically imports shipping info for each order. Just print the label, stick it on, and schedule a pickup or drop-off. No need to rush around in holiday traffic. With Stamps.com's built-in tracking tools and delivery notifications, you can avoid those dreaded "where's my package" messages from stressed-out customers. And if you ever have a question, Stamps.com's award-winning U.S.-based shipping support team is ready to help. Start shipping and saving with Stamps.com today. There's no risk, and with my promo code SAVAGE, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free shipping credits and a digital shipping scale. There are no long-term commitments or contracts. You'll be up and running in minutes. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic, promo code SAVAGE. Stamps.com. Easy e-commerce shipping for less, a lot less.
Hi, Dan. This is a 30-year-old straight woman calling from the West Coast. I have a question about how to address a male friend with boundary issues. My partner and I are a part of a great friend group that consists of about 6 straight couples who get together regularly to celebrate birthdays, holidays, and even travel out of town together for the weekend getaways. I'm really close with all the girls in the group, and these friendships have been a major form of support in the last 2 years. My problem I'm calling about has to do with one of the men in the group. It's come up in recent conversations between some women that they're being made to feel uncomfortable by this friend during parties where there's drinking and Molly being consumed. This drug is something that does not happen at every get-together nor every party, but it's a drug that's enjoyed by the group on special occasions, and we feel it's being done safely and responsibly with friends. The man I'm calling about is in a serious committed relationship with another friend in the group. And they as a couple have been known to be more open with other couples and have played around with swinging and openness in past relationships with previous friends who don't live in our area. Everyone in our group thinks this is great and really don't have judgments towards that. The problem is that this friend always seems to seek out conversations with women that feels like he's grooming them to be sexual with him or with them as a couple. And it's always when people are high on Molly. He asks very intimate questions about their sex lives and their relationship openness. He also asks women if he can touch their nipples or other body parts. 2 female friends have brought this up separately to me, and they feel they've been pushed beyond their comfort levels in these conversations, as well as given consent for him to touch their breasts or butt when he's asked. But in hindsight, they felt that they said yes in shock and felt it would have made things weird if they said no. They're left to feel embarrassed and violated the next day and feel stupid for not saying no in the moment, especially since we talk about consent so frequently in society. Now they feel like they should have known better. The friends who have experienced this with him worry that if they bring this up to him, it could throw a wrench in the relationship with his girlfriend, who I'm sure would be embarrassed and upset with him, and they're in the process of buying a home together. The women also feel guilty and like they would be confronting him without cause because they did say yes and he did ask for consent before he touched them. So they feel bad now for changing their story and making him the wrongdoer. We want him to know that the women feel uncomfortable to be around him when he asks these questions, and that somehow the way he asks for consent makes it hard to actually be honest about it. This is also important to be brought up to his attention because we know the couples attend other festivals and have friend groups where Molly's used, so this could be a problem for other women we don't even know about. This friend's a very caring and thoughtful person, so I think he'll be mortified to learn that he's made his friends feel uncomfortable and wants to change. So Dan, how can we address this in the group without blowing up the friend group, and what's the moral obligation to tell our girlfriend who's in a serious relationship with him when she's not directly involved, but she might want to know about it before she makes any further steps in their relationship?
So, you say he's a good guy, and that he's going to be mortified when you confront him, which is what you're going to do, which is what you need to do, that he's going to be mortified to learn that after the fact, the women that he's hitting on and asking personal questions of a sexual nature of when everybody's rolling on Molly, after the fact, even though in the moment they've consented, after the fact, when they sober back up, they feel weird and icky and awkward and gross and violated by his modus operandi here. The fact that when he's high on Molly, he is a bit of a lech and a creep and takes advantage of other people who are high on Molly. You know, everybody's high and drunk at these moments, and drugs really fuck with people's judgment and their inhibitions. And maybe he can't handle it. And maybe you guys shouldn't be doing Molly with him or around him anymore, which is not to shift the responsibility onto your shoulders or the shoulders of all the women in this friend group. But why is he still invited to these events if he's making everyone feel uncomfortable? All that said, I'm just quoting you back to you. You say he's a good guy and that he's, I guess, to some extent, careful and conscientious and thoughtful and doesn't want to think of himself as a creep who takes advantage of women who are fucked up on drugs. And he may not think of these incidents in the same way or see them in the same way. And so you're going to have to open his eyes. You're going to have to make him see these events. I don't want to give someone who's a lech and a creep the benefit of too many doubts. I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt that you introduced into my mind when you said he was a good enough guy who's going to be mortified when you tell him. Hopefully mortified enough to stop doing this drug if he can't be on this drug without being a lech and a creep, or mortified enough, you know, it's not like you lose your mind or become a different person when you're a Molly. Mortified enough to know now, to learn the lesson from this point onward, going forward forever, that asking people on Molly for their consent to touch them isn't all right. And that if he doesn't have that kind of touch relationship, you know, people, a lot of people do Molly with sex partners and established partners, and there's a lot of touching and cuddling that goes on. But if he doesn't have a touch relationship with someone, trying to upgrade to a touchy-feely relationship with someone when everyone's on Molly is not okay. So tell him. And then you can gauge from his reaction whether you trust him enough going forward. I think he doesn't get any more than one more chance to be on Molly in a group setting. If he fucks up or is a creep and a lech in this exact same way ever again after you tell him and he is mortified by what you have to tell him, well, then obviously it's intentional and the drugs are an excuse to be a creep and a lech. And a creep and a lech is who he is, as opposed to creepy and lechy is a way he's coming across when he's on this drug and he needs to monitor his own behavior and police himself better and remember other people's boundaries or presume that other people have boundaries even when everyone else is on Molly. And just because they're in an open relationship doesn't make this okay. He shouldn't be searching for new sex partners for him and his girlfriend when he's fucked up on drugs. And if you think his girlfriend is going to have such a problem with this, she's not going to want to buy a house with him. Yeah, out with this now, because if this keeps happening, it's going to come out sooner or later. Better now before she buys the house with this guy than after. But if after you tell him and he's appropriately mortified, this stops, okay, well, then maybe he can continue to be a part of your friend group and you can trust him. But if it doesn't stop, and by doesn't stop, I mean if it ever happens again, then you need to cut him off. You need to cut him out of your friend group. All right, before we get to this week's listener response calls, let's read listener tweets. Kill the Cat Kitty tweets. My only regret in life is discovering fake Dan Savage's Savage Lovecast 24 years into my 25 years of life. I finally caught up on all 785 episodes of The Micro. Think I'll celebrate by submitting my own question and maybe getting a Magnum subscription. First, I want to say, in response to that, cats, please don't fuck them. Please don't kill them. Pretty sure Kill the Cat Kitty's handle is ironic or a pop culture reference that flew over my aging head, but just in case, and to get out in front of any criticism that I may be endorsing the killing of cats here, I just wanted to toss that out there. Please don't kill cats. And then I wanted to say thank you, Kill the Cat Kitty, for listening to all 785 episodes of the Savage Lovecast. Or, assuming you just heard me read your tweet, all 786 episodes, and I'll be gifting you a Magnum subscription. Check your DMs. Jabbles MacBeaver tweets, in response to the caller on episode 785, who asked how to tell her suitor no, as a straight man that's been in the situation, do him and yourself a favor and just give him a hard no. Hearing a hard no is a whole lot easier than wondering if there's a chance. Fully endorse the hard no. Also endorse leading with clarity and kindness, as frequent Savage Lovecast guest expert Joan Price suggested, also on Twitter. Her go-to language when rejecting a suitor is, thank you, but no, I don't see us as a good match. Best wishes for finding what you seek. I like that language and wanted to share it. Also, if the person you're hard-knowing with clarity and kindness wants to argue with you, well, then you block them without mercy. And finally, Juju Mimi Mama tweets, in episode 785, Dan, you were overly harsh answering the 30-year-old woman whose partner had the texting affair. Being open to poly does not mean she would have given him permission if she had known. Opening a relationship is not that simple. Poly under duress violates trust. All right. Perhaps I was too harsh on that caller. And you are right, Juju Mimi Mama. Opening a relationship is not that simple. Opening a relationship is complicated. And sometimes it's messy. There are lots of couples out there in open relationships that are good and are healthy now, but were messy and complicated during their transition periods when they were going from closed to open. Sometimes there were, during those transition periods when relationships went from closed to open but are now good and healthy, there were violations of trust that had to be forgiven so that trust could be reestablished and the relationship could survive and get good and healthy. All right, thanks to everybody who tweeted about the show or posted about the show on your other social media over the last week. We really appreciate it. And if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now, listener response calls.
This is a comment for the caller who wanted to send a link to nude photos to their therapist. I'm a psychiatrist. And the first thing I will say is this is a horrible idea. Absolutely do not. It doesn't matter if the therapeutic relationship has ended. It's an ethical and professional violation to have a romantic contact with a patient. Just not uncommon in the therapeutic relationship for sexual or amorous feelings to emerge. And that's something that should be processed within therapy and never acted on. I also have some doubts that the therapist said or joked about wanting to see these pictures. It's not uncommon if there are fantasies emerging in a patient's mind for them to interpret actions of the therapist that may have been more benign as having significance for a romantic or a physical connection. So bad idea across the board, not uncommon. If anyone out there is listening and you're having sexual or romantic feelings about your therapist, talk to them about it. And as Dan says, they'll tell you everything you need to know in their response. If they're curious, they want to explore it more and understand what's going on and help you process it to maintain a therapeutic and professional relationship, that's great. If they want to act on it, then you have my permission to fire them and never go back.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the woman in episode 785 who spoke about intrusive thoughts about whether she's in a relationship with a woman because she wants attention. What you called queer imposter syndrome may be better explained by something called sexual orientation OCD. It's a subtype of obsessive-compulsive disorder where someone has doubts about their sexuality and often experience compulsive checking and rumination to settle these doubts and get certainty about their sexual orientation. This is something experienced by people of every sexual orientation and identification. If this is the case, you're right that the woman would benefit from cognitive behavioral therapy, as well as something called exposure and response prevention, as these two are part of the gold standard of treatment for sexual orientation OCD and all other subtypes of obsessive-compulsive disorder.
This is a response to the caller who has the new boyfriend who wants to make her upchuck. And I would like to share an experience. I've had lots of subs, and the third most intense sub that I've ever been with used to love when I would make her choke with my cock. And one time we were in the kitchen, she was on her knees on the tile floor, being a good girl. She went so hard, all of a sudden she pulled away and she puked all over the floor. And then I was utterly disgusted. And then she looked up at me with her beautiful eyes and she said, "Look, Daddy, I kept it on the floor." And it turned into something good. So never discount the weird.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me for next week's show or a comment about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and comments is to use the voice memo app on your phone and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call the Savage Lovecast at 206-302-2064. We prefer voice memos to calls. The sound quality is better, but we love your questions and your comments, however you choose to get them to us. Hump 2021 has its final showing in a real movie theater this weekend in Philadelphia, where we'll be playing at Fringe Arts, or if you can't make it to Philly, grab a ticket for our last round of online live streams of Hump 2021 at humpfilmfest.com. Also, the deadline to submit your film for next year's Hump Film Festival is less than a month away, so grab a camera, a friend or two, and make a short flick. And remember, Hump films don't have to be hardcore, explicitly pornographic. We've had films in the festival of a guy playing an accordion in his underpants, singing a song he wrote about his love life, and a woman jumping on a trampoline while she peed her pants. Go to humpfilmfest.com for all the info you need. And reminder that next week's episode will feature questions solely from LGBTQ folks. So if that describes you, submit your question like now. I'll need them by midweek-ish to answer in time for next week's show. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Judy Gold on Twitter at Judy Gold. That's Judy spelled J-E-W-D-Y Gold. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Artunian and me and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for joining me.